Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
There's Reggie, where he belongs, behind the glass, socially distanced. And once again, I'm impressed. No submarine sandwich. Remember those pre-COVID days when you used to walk in here with a submarine sandwich from Subway, and you'd make a mess, and the little pieces of lettuce were all over the board and everything? Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end, but they did. All right, let's get started here. I'm looking at my little needles here and the levels. They seem to be bouncing, especially peppy today. And I feel good, so they should be just as peppy as I am. And now it's my job to make sure those things are bouncing for the next hour. All right? Okay, let's get started. I will give you the three S's. Put it in the book. Episode 223, put it in the book. I'll give you the three S's and I'll count it down, and we'll make a little podcast magic. What do you think? Okay, here we go. Three S's. Star, smile, strong. Okay, Jim, let's get this one now. You're in the on-deck circle. You're ready to walk up to the plate. A good pitcher up on the mound today, but you're feeling good. You think you can hit his curve and his fastball. I'm feeling good. I'm walking into the batter's box with a lot of confidence today, Reggie. All right? All right, here we go. I'll count it down. You hit that music, and the magic begins. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever your favorite podcast is downloaded, where you might go. Any platform it is, we're there. So don't forget to subscribe to that platform, rate this podcast, and most importantly, tell your friends. Send them a link. Send them a message. Send them the good word that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why the heck isn't it theirs? Now, yes, I know, faithful podcast listeners, that last week, episode 222 was not on all those other platforms like Apple and on the app and things like that. There was a technical problem at the company's end, not even at WGN Radio's, but the bigger Nextstar company, but hopefully, it's already been rectified. But if you did not hear episode 222, it is available at WGNRadio.com or on the link on my Facebook page. So if you missed it, couldn't get it on whatever platform you go, just go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, and it will be there. Or just go to my Facebook page, be there too. As I always say, if you're an old or new listener, you can listener, you can always go to that said podcast page at WGNRadio.com and find all previous 222 episodes of this podcast, which can only mean one thing. Oh, if you've been listening long enough, why don't you just finish the line for me, okay? I'll do the line and you finish it, either mentally or if you're home alone or in your car. Say it out loud, right? Have a little fun. Let's see how well you know this podcast and how predictable I am. If all 222 podcasts are in the vault there, then they can only mean one thing. Did you fill it in? Okay, for you new folks or people who haven't paid attention, the line is, so welcome to episode 223. Did you get it? I am looking forward to this episode because it is something very near and dear to my heart, and I'm going to have fun sharing this and the discoveries that I made in the last couple of days with you. I have spoken many times on the radio and on my podcasts how much music means to my life. I'm an only child, and as a little kid, the radio and then later music on a turntable or a cassette or an 8-track or then a CD and now a digital file has been a key component of my life, not only as just entertainment, but it really has influenced me, it influenced the way I think, influenced the way I dress, influenced the way I look at the world, influenced the way I've discovered other music, influenced who I am. There's no question about that. And even more than recorded music, I love going to concerts. There's just something about the live concert setting, which it just does it for me. I'm a huge a movie fan. I like a lot of different types of entertainment, but in terms of personally going to things, for me, it's a concert. I'm a sports fan, have been since I can remember. I played 3 sports in high school, played sports well into my adult life, still remain active, and I've gone to some really cool sporting events in my life, including one of the most goosebump moment of all. If anybody has ever seen, you can go on YouTube and find this. If you've ever seen the 1991 All-Star Game of hockey, it was here at the Chicago Stadium, and America had just gone, I think the night before, a couple of days before, had just entered into the Kuwait War, if you remember that. George Bush the first was our president. It had been a while since we really got engaged in what you considered a real war. And it was a very quick war. It was not, some long drawn out affair, but there was such a sense of patriotism at that time, because of, I think, the fact that we hadn't really been pushed to the brink of war in a while, and we went in guns blazing and ended it in a couple of days. But there was such a spirit of patriotism just overflowing the country at that time, that at the old Chicago Stadium, which was one of the best places to really make some noise, that place was just not only contained noise, but amplified it. And I've been to some of the biggest and most popular indoor venues in the world in terms of acoustics. The stadium didn't necessarily have acoustics, but it certainly made noise sound louder. And you can go on YouTube and see it. It's a tradition at Blackhawk games now, but the tradition really started at this game. Wayne Messmer, who does the national anthem at Cub games now, had begun his career doing the national anthem at Blackhawk games. And the fans got so riled up that they used to start clapping right long, as he was in the last verse, in the last stanza, they would start clapping instead of waiting until he finished. And that became tradition. But it was at this game, on this moment, in the midst of U.S. going to war and all this patriotism, you walked into the stadium that night, and there were people had full-sized and even oversized American flags and small little hand flags, and people had sparklers. There was just, this seemed to be very organic. But as I said, there was this wave of patriotism going through the country at that time, and this event was on, national networks because it was the All-Star Game. When the national anthem started and Wayne Messmer started singing, people started screaming and clapping at the beginning of the song, practically drowning him out. Flags were waving. It was an amazing sight. This all happened spontaneously. It was just when people heard the first notes of the national anthem. They just started clapping and bursting out cheering and showing this pride in America. It may have been short-lived, who knows, but for that moment, in that setting, it was electric. And that's where the tradition started now, that if you go to a Blackhawk game, when Jim Cornelison sings the national anthem, as soon as it starts, the people start clapping. Well, that tradition started at the All-Star game in 1991. It was 91. And you could see it on YouTube. Go on YouTube, just put All-Star Game Chicago 91, and you'll see it. It's amazing. And I was there, and it was a goosebump moment. And I would even consider that a concert, that moment, because there was music involved. And that's what I'm talking about. There are those, when you go to a concert, it's of the moment. It's that night. And for that hour and a half or 2 hours, that performer is there with you, sharing with you. Nobody else. They may have fans all around the world, but on that night, they're there with you. And you're there sharing your excitement and your enthusiasm and your passion. They are throwing that out at you. You're throwing that out at them. And you're also surrounded by people who have a like mind, just like you, who are just as obsessed, just as enthusiastic. I have found that there is no such thing as a number one fan of anybody, because there are different layers and there are different levels, and everybody is a fan in their own way. And that's what's so great about, for me, the concert experience, is that all those big fans converge in one place with the artist, and there is a connection and a passion and a love, if you will, going back and forth. And when you're in that moment at a concert that's really jiving, and the crowd is into it, and the performer's feeding off of it, and being a performer myself and having been on stage many times, both singing and acting and performing, I know what it's like. And believe me, so I've been on both sides of that dynamic, and each one is unique, but they're both special. And so, I love movies, I love sporting events, but for me, it's a concert that it never fails to just be a special event that gets my blood pumping. And I when it's a good show, I leave with a hoarse voice, and I'm usually exhausted, and that's how I know that I had a good time. I'm working as hard in my seat as the performer is up on stage. I'm one of those people. Some people might say, geez, I'm glad I don't sit next to you. You're probably not, because I'm playing air piano or air guitar, and I'm screaming every word to every song. So yeah, the concert music is very important to me, and the concert setting it takes that to another level. Music has been a very important part of my life and my career. I channeled that knowledge and that passion and that enthusiasm for it into my career. Before I even graduated college, when I was a junior in college, I was writing a weekly column for a newspaper, reviewing bands, reviewing albums, talking about music. And then I continued. I've been writing about music professionally from that day until today. I still write about music. So from my early 20s now into my middle age, music has been just a focal point for me. And I wouldn't be the same without it. When I was 12 years old or 11 years old, I joined the Columbia Record and Tape Club. In fact, I'm very proud of the fact that of the 12 albums you got for a penny when you joined that club, one of those choices in there, I don't know all the rest of them. I was only 11. But I do remember one of them was Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run album. So I like to think that I was a pretty cool 11-year-old. In fact, I like to think I'm a pretty cool 9-year-old, because that's when I started liking Elton John. So from a very young age, music was a friend, a companion, and it became a best friend. And as I said, an influence on who I am, where I've gone, where I am today, and where I might be going in the future. Music has always been a part of it. I have to have music around me a majority of the part of the day. I've got music in the background, whatever I'm doing. It's been that way since I was a little kid. Even when I did homework, I know a lot of people, you know, when they do homework or they're doing some, you know, a special project at work where they have to concentrate, they need complete silence. They need isolation. Not me. I need music in the background. Even today, when I'm writing on the computer, I have to have music in the background, and my brain is either so used to it or is wired that way that I could be singing a song with the music in the background and still be able to focus on the next sentence and the next word I'm writing when I'm writing some kind of a story or something like that. I've always needed music in the background. It drives my wife crazy because she likes silence. So it makes it a little interesting, but I just have to have that music behind me. I go out to the patio, I bring a radio with me, or I bring my iPod with me, you name it. I'm in the car, that's a given, obviously. But always have to have music around. And so, yeah, what can I say? Now, one of the things that if I got any bad traits from my mom or dad, you know, you always try to work on those. It's impossible not to be influenced by your parents, right? We always try, especially when we're younger, we don't want to be our parents. As we get older, we realize we are practically the same. But what we try to do, if you are objective about it, is to, you know, at certain point, you look at your parents, you know, from an objective view to say, well, that's a, you know, I might be having that attribute of theirs, and maybe that's not the best thing to have. So you try to work on yourself, and you try to, you know, to bury some of those influences that you may have picked up as a kid, which is impossible not to. These people raised you. They nourished you for the early part of your life. You observed them almost exclusively as you were growing up. They were the adult role model. Even though you saw other adults in your life, you were with them the most. And then as you begin to venture out, you start to see other adults in person, your teachers, your coaches, your scout leaders, whatever authority figures in anything that may be. Principals, teachers are probably the biggest initial ones. And you start to look at those people, and sometimes you start to try to emulate them. And then as you get older, you start to maybe look to the outside world. And maybe there's people you've never met, and you do look to other personalities that are either in movies or on television, or you've read in books or historical figures or whatever it is. And you start to maybe try to emulate some of their traits and things like that, you know. And then there's people you work with and people you meet every day, and your friends and your family, and we are constantly you know, influenced. But there's no question the influence that our parents have, and hopefully we take the good of them and we kind of smooth out the rough edges of some of their personality traits, and then we pass that out and move that on to the next generation. At least, I won't be doing that because I don't have any kids, but maybe you will. But so that's the way it goes. So if there's any bad traits I've got from my parents, and I know it, sometimes I sound or act just like them, and I stop myself if it's something that I would rather not be doing. But if there's one bad trait I picked up from my mom, I embrace it. I've been working on it, but at the same time, I embrace it. It's kind of a blessing and a curse. I've said to you many times here on the podcast and on the radio, my mom was a pack rat. She saved everything, and it was a blessing and a curse, as I say, because she saved everything. And when she passed away, it was in a tremendous work and a tremendous obligation to go through that stuff and throw it out or find a new home for it or go through. It was just a big job because she just saved everything. That was the bad side. On the good side, she saved everything. I've got things now that I have in my bins of my own childhood memorabilia that I never would have had if she hadn't kept everything. Through the years, I've weeded through and thrown things out that she saved, and I'm like, okay, why did she save this? But there's other things that could have easily been thrown out that I do have. And at least I got a chance to make the decision myself, as opposed to say, geez, why didn't we keep that? How many times do you say that to yourself? Well, this with my mom saving everything, she gave me the opportunity to go through it myself years later to say, is this something I want to keep or is this something I don't want to? So I've got old report cards and old, you know, Cub Scout things and old toys and just whatever. I've got a lot of great memories that I've decided to keep. And I'm going to have to get rid of those someday soon. I understand that. But for the time being, there's every so often when I do go through those bins, all of a sudden I remember, oh, geez, I need this. Or I remember this thing, and I go in there, and it brings back a wealth of memory. So I've been a pack rat myself. I've been trying to declutter over the last several years because I don't want to leave the mess that my mom left me. My dad was just the opposite. I was able to clear his stuff out in 15 minutes. He basically had a closet and a couple of drawers. He only used what he needed. When he bought something new, he got rid of something old. My mom kept everything. So I'm combining both. I'm trying to be a little more like my dad. If we buy something new, something old goes out. You don't keep piling it up. And as I say, I continue to declutter and reorganize on a regular basis to say, okay, if I haven't looked at this in 5 years, I'm going to get rid of it now because I may have thought I wanted to keep it 5 years ago, but I haven't even looked at it or thought about it, so it's time for that to go. But I'm glad I do have something of a pat rack mentality from my mom because I have a memorabilia collection. I love to collect things, and so did she. One of the things that I have been collecting, because I think definitely from her, she said, hey, hold on to those. Don't forget those. Because music is such an important part of my life and going to concerts has been such a major part of my life, I have always saved my concert ticket stubs. Dating back to my first real concert that I went to that I wanted to go to. And that's the way I sort of begin this journey of my concert stubs. When I was a little kid, I went to a lot of different performances with my parents, but basically it was to see people that they wanted to see, not I wanted to see. But it wasn't until I was 12 when I went to the first concert where I said, I have to go to this concert. And of course it was an Elton John concert, July 27th, 1976 at the Chicago Stadium. And so that's when I say that was my first real concert. It was certainly my first rock concert. Before that, you know, I was seeing people, and you can Google these names, you know, like Robert Goulet and Sergio Franchi and, you know, and some of those kind of people. We used to go to this small venue that used to get some really top-level talent of the day out in the suburbs called the Mill Run Theater. And we would go to the Mill Run constantly. So I had been to plays and I had been to performances when I was younger, but I consider the first concert, the first one that I really wanted to go to that was in my generation, was the Elton John concert in 1976. So that's my first concert ticket stub. Well, 44 years later, when I was 12, I still save my concert ticket stubs. And I'm sure, I know, having gone through them, that there's a couple that, for some reason, have gotten lost over the years. But for the most part, I have those concert stubs from the late 70s, throughout the 80s, throughout the 90s, and now even starting in the 2000s, those concert tickets are 20 years old. And I've always kept them in a box, in a shoe box, and I've had to go through many shoe boxes. They've worn out. I've lost the tops. But as it stands right now, I still have my concert ticket stub collection of all the concerts I went to. And now, and over the years, that has expanded to include tickets to plays, dramatic plays, as well as stage musicals. I haven't saved all of my sports event tickets because when I was a little kid, I went to a lot of sporting events and never thought about saving those tickets. So those are gone forever. But I did save a few of them, but I've certainly saved them over the last 35 years. So there's quite a few sporting event. There are opera tickets. As I said, there's stage musicals and dramas and even art gallery tickets. So whatever event I go to, I save the ticket stub. And they're all, and as I said, they're not all in the box. I have saved them. Some of them are with some travel information. Some of those are probably hidden away in some other books. I know that they exist. If I really tried to find them, I probably could. But for the most part, the great majority are in this box. And currently, it's in a, I've had, as I said, go through a few shoe boxes, but this one's actually been a pretty strong one. It should have been. It's an oversized Timberland boot box. I asked my wife several years ago, do you have a shoe box, a bigger shoe box? Because I need one for all my ticket stubs, because the ticket stubs, as we continue to go places and I continue to go to concerts, just we're growing in number. And so I was bursting out of an older shoe box, a normal size shoe box. So she said, well, wait, how about this one? So she brings down this oversized Timberland boot box, which is great. It's made of heavy cardboard. There's not a lot of design on it, so it doesn't look goofy. It's just kind of brown cardboard. You wouldn't even know it's Timberland. It's not even colored in. It's just outlined, so it's very, you know, back in the design. So it just looks like a brown cardboard box. What's nice about it, it's got a connected top, not a loose top, which always breaks or, you know, gets flattened or gets lost or, you know. This has a nice connected top. It seals well, and so I'm happy with my concert stub box. Now, there have been times over the years where I have tried to organize my concert ticket stubs and counted them, but I haven't done it for, I would say, at least the last 20 years. I've counted my Elton John concerts. It's very well documented that I have been to 197 Elton John concerts and was on my way this year to easily breaking the 200 mark. I would have broken it in April of this year at Madison Square Garden, the way I had it set up. But the concerts in March and April were canceled, and they are still not rescheduled. They're postponed. So I'm stuck at 197 since November of last year when I saw Elton in Boston. So I have counted my concert ticket stubs. My second favorite concert performer, I can't really say that. I mean, as I say, I mentioned him earlier. I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan as well. I've seen him in concert 47 times all around the country, coast to coast, and places in between. And I've been a fan of his since I was 11. I haven't seen him as many times as Elton. First time I saw Bruce was November 20th, 1980 at the old Rosemont Horizon, which is now the Allstate Arena. So my Bruce Springsteen tickets go from November 20th, 1980, right up through probably, what was it, 2019, I believe, or at the end of 2018 when I saw him in his last tour, which was his Broadway show. I saw a couple of those, and I saw sort of the last leg. I think it was in 2018. I'm almost positive of that now that I think about it. I should look at my concerts ticket stub, shouldn't I? That's why you keep them. That's why you keep them, folks, as reference. I'm pretty sure it was 2018. It couldn't have been 2019, was it? No. So anyway, so those go. Those are what? 40 years old now? I've been seeing Bruce for 40 years. I've been seeing Elton for 44 years. So we've had quite a relationship. A lot of people say, how could you be an Elton John fan who is so flamboyant? He plays the piano. He's much more pop-oriented. He's much more of in the celebrity world. He's much more of a hit maker. And then you got Bruce Springsteen, kind of the troubadouring, dark and moody message singer-songwriter, sensitive, message-oriented. And I don't know. They both speak to me. And the one thing they do have in common, while their music may be different and their influences may be different to some extent and their sound may be different, one thing they have in common, which draws me in, is they are both amazing live performers. Once again, it comes down to the concert. And if you've been to a Bruce Springsteen concert, even if you're not a fan, after that, you've been converted. And it's the same thing with Elton. When you see Elton in person and you see the mastery of that piano and his charisma and the ability to win over a crowd in a second and to have 25,000, in some cases 60,000 people just screaming before he's even done anything, you know you're in the presence of a special performer. And I would put Bruce Springsteen and Elton John in that same elite class of amazing performers. And that's why combined I've seen them, what, 197 and 47, what is that, 254 times, just those two performers, 254 times. Wow. Okay, so that's pretty serious, huh? Oh no, is it 40? I don't have my calculator with me. 9 plus 4 is 13. 247. Still an impressive number. So here's the thing. I don't know about you, but the current COVID situation has certainly given, I think, all of us a little more time than we expected to have on our hands. And if you're like me, you have been trying to fill that time with doing a lot of organizing around the house and projects and things you just never had the time to do. Well, you can't use that excuse anymore, and so you do them. And so over the last 6 months since March, I have been cleaning closets and cleaning the garage. And I'm already a very organized person. I've been decluttering over the last several years to begin with, so I don't even have a lot to declutter. I'm decluttering my decluttering, if that's even possible. But closets and garages, I mean, my garage now is Spartan. There's nothing in there that I don't use. There's no dumping grounds anywhere. The basement, I've talked about that, is down to whatever it needs. Every room in the house right now has what it needs. I mean, I certainly have some storage of bins that I, you know, Christmas things and my Elton collections and my childhood things, as I've said, and the writings that I do and photos and all that stuff. But my point is, it's only the stuff I really need now. I can find anything I want anywhere from top to bottom, from the top of our house to the basement. Every drawer, I have gone through everything, every cabinet, every drawer, every closet, under every bed, you name it. I have reorganized my organization. I have decluttered my decluttering. Ironically, of all these things that I have, you know, and I'm very anal retentive. I know that. I mean, it's stuff on a shelf has to be, you know, it has to be turned just right. In fact, I had to laugh. I was watching an episode of the great show Frasier the other day, and I had to laugh because Frasier walked past one of his display cases, and there was some kind of an antique or something that he told Daphne, oh, by the way, Daphne, this needs to turn just a quarter turn to the right. That's the way it's supposed to be displayed. And I'm like, I do that all the time. That's me. I don't know if I'm proud of that, but it's part of who I am. It's got to look right. Even if there's no one else seen it but me, it's got to look right, because what if somebody does show up by surprise? Then everything needs to be displayed correctly. Yeah, I'm a joy to live with, fans, as you could tell. Anyway, so I've been cleaning everything up and straightening everything out, driving my wife crazy. But as I said, time on my hands and stuff that should have been done, never had time to do. Well, now we have the time. But there's one thing, oddly enough, that I, for whatever reason, neglected to do or shied away from doing. I'm not sure why. And finally, I just looked in the mirror and said, oh, just do it. And so last week, I went and got my Timberland box filled with my ticket stubs. Now, like I said, I have over the years organized them in some way. My Elton's ticket stubs are all organized and my Bruce stubs are organized. by in chronological order. But all the other ones are kind of, I did go back 1 year and at least put them in the, you know, in order or put them together, like with in the way I, you know, how many times I saw a specific artist. So at least they were all together. The times I saw a specific artist, they were all together. But they weren't really in any chronological order or anything, but at least there was that level because there were so many of them. Well, now they've grown in number, all of them. The tickets, the concert tickets, the play tickets, the sports tickets, and I was just throwing them in the box, putting them in the, just in the back row. Well, finally, you know, I was like, there's stuff all over the place, even in the Timberland box. The Timberland box was getting disorganized. And it was kind of like one of these things like, oh, that's going to be a project. Well, once again, so what? You have the time, do it. So a couple weeks ago, last week, I got the Timberland box out. I got a nice big table. And I said, I'm going through these. I'm going to organize them. I'm going to count them. And I'm going to get that organized as well, which will help in the future. Because now the next time I go, it'll be easier to just put them together. In fact, I was so got into it so much, and I am so anal and so organized that I did reorganize my organization of the ticket stubs the next day. After I organized them and thought I was done, I got a new idea to better organize them. So I went back. I was neglecting doing this, and then it became an obsession. So the next day I went back in. And while I kept my Elton and my Bruce ticket stubs and my concert ticket stubs all together, the other ones were less. And so I thought it might be a good idea since they this way to demark, you know, to mark where they are to get easy access to all of them, to put the other sub categories like stage musicals, stage dramas and comedies, sports tickets, event tickets like going to an art gallery, or what else is there? Opera, different from a concert. So I put them all in separate envelopes. So now when I go to one of those other events, I will simply put it in that envelope, easy to find, no mess, and now it's in the right spot. That's me, folks. But the concert tickets, they're still aside, you know, I put like a little thing like you would at a record store for Elton John and Bruce Springsteen, and then there's everyone else. But now at least they're all together. So this allowed me not only to count the total number of concerts that I've been to in the last 44 years, but also allowed me to count how many concerts I've seen of specific artists multiple times. I've been very diligent and fortunate to see most of my favorites, if not every one of my favorites, and many of the great, at least in the rock and roll world and even in the entertainment world, some of the greats, performers of all time. I've seen Frank Sinatra. I've seen Dean Martin. I've seen Sammy Davis Jr. I've seen Don Rickles. I've seen Jackie Mason and Alan King. I've seen Tony Bennett. I've seen some of those people, I've seen Jerry Lewis both perform and as well as saw him on Broadway in Damn Yankees. So my point is I've seen many of not only my favorites and my idols, but also some of the most important entertainers of the last 50, 60, 70, 80 years. And I've seen some great rock and roll bands many times, or some great rock and roll bands one time, some has-been bands and some legendary bands. And when it comes to the real cornerstones of classic rock, I think I've pretty much seen all the major ones. Obviously didn't get a chance to see the Beatles. Very few people did. But The Who and The Rolling Stones and The Kinks and Tom Petty and Lou Reed and Simon and Garfunkel and you name it. So I've been very fortunate. Didn't fall in my lap though. I had to work for it. So in addition to the 244 of Elton and Bruce, I counted all the rock concerts I'd been to. I've been to probably 200 plays, stage musicals and dramas. I can't even count the sporting events because I said there's a lot of them that, you know, I didn't save tickets for. I've been to like 40 operas. I've been to some of the greatest galleries in the world. And I have the ticket stubs from that, from the Louvre in France and from the Prado in Madrid and the Uffizi Gallery in Italy and the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, the Picasso Museum in France, and the Dalí home and museum in Spain. I've been to some of the great museums in the world, and I've got those ticket stubs. And now they're all in envelopes. But when it comes to concerts, that's the bread and butter. That's what I was really after here. And I was actually, when I did the final count of all the concerts, I was surprised that there weren't more. Because I felt like I've really gone to a lot of concerts, especially, my gosh, in my 20s and 30s. It was almost every week. And I'm not exaggerating. There were some summers that I lived at this concert venue that is no longer in Chicago called Poplar Creek. I was there sometimes two or three times a week throughout my 20s. And I've got the ticket stubs to prove it, which is another reason you keep them. For validation and proof, not just to remember things, but to prove you were there. A lot of people say they were there. I've got the ticket stubs to prove it. Well, the total number surprised me. It's still, I think, an impressive number. I just thought it was more. I thought I'd been to more, but you know what? The stubs are proof, right? I can't argue with the facts. As I said, there may be some ticket stubs that fell through the cracks, but not many, not enough to say, wow, there's 100 extra concerts I didn't go to. No. I always keep my concert stubs. You can tell how old they are and by the dates that I keep them. Most of them are over 35 years old. So, you know, if not now 40 years old, going back to 1980. The total number, and I'm going to give it, I'm not going to give an exact number because I do believe there is at least, you know, 4 or 5, maybe even 10 concert tickets that probably have fallen through the cracks. I remember going to these concerts, and I don't see the ticket stubs there. So something happened to them along the way. But it's safe to say that since I was 12 in 1976, over the last 44 years, because I haven't gone to see a concert since February 19th of this year. I got one in this year, so I can't say when. A whole year without seeing a concert. That might happen next year, but it didn't happen in 2020. I saw one. I went to Madison Square Garden in New York and saw the Eagles perform Hotel California, which was a great concert. And then 2 weeks later, the whole world shut down. But I've got that concert ticket stub. It's right there. So I saw one in 2019. Even though the year was only a month and a half old, I saw a major concert. Anyway, the total number of concerts that I've gone to in 44 years is roughly 538. And I would think there's probably a little few more than that. Now that's counting Elton and Bruce and everyone else, about 538. Now I'm surprised. I thought, I mean, that's, you know, we always, especially men, seem to exaggerate size, don't we? I'm no different. I exaggerate. I thought my concert tally was bigger. It's still impressive, but I thought it was bigger. What man hasn't said that, right? Anyway, in the words of Don Rickles, anyway, I thought I had seen at least 500 without Bruce and Elton, but that's not the case. All told, about 530 some, almost 540, I would say. Now, that's not a bad number. I mean, 10 a year over 44 years is only 440. So I've got another 100 on top of that. Now, I don't have my calculator with me. I proved that earlier. And I'm no math whiz, but it might be, you know, 11 or that might average out to be 11 or 12 concerts a year over 40 years, which is one a month, which is a pretty good ratio. I mean, that's a pretty good, it's a pretty good ratio to go to one concert a year, I would think. So while I thought I went to more, I still think that I've accumulated a pretty good number, a pretty impressive number of concerts. And they're all in that box. And so when I went through the box, it was a very cool experience because, first of all, I looked at every ticket stub, and each one, for the most part, I flashed right back to that concert. And I remembered either the concert or going to the concert or something about that concert. So that was very cool from a memory standpoint, from a special life memory standpoint. That was very cool to remember those concerts and to be reminded of them. There were a couple there where I said, wait a minute, I saw Tom Petty in 1984? I don't remember that. But there it was. There was one concert by one artist. If you would have asked me, before I went through this box the other day, if you would have asked me, have you ever seen this person in concert, I would have said no. But I did. I don't remember the concert. When I saw the ticket stub, then I went, oh, that's right, we did go. And I flashed on a moment of the concert. I remember not being overly impressed by the show, which surprised me because I liked his recordings, especially his early ones. But we did go because I did like him, and it was a big show at the time. If you would have, I'll tell you who it was. I don't remember offhand before seeing that ticket stub, I remember ever seeing Harry Connick Jr. in concert. But when I saw him in the early 90s, he was a big deal. Kind of the new Sinatra, if you remember that. But I had completely forgotten that concert. But there were concerts that I forgot that I saw some of my favorite people, like, oh, really? And there were other times I went, oh, my gosh, remember that concert. By going through the concert tickets closely, I was able to, once again, validating and researching. This is important stuff. My first Elton John autograph was at an Elton John concert. I had always gone to Elton John concerts, and if I was up toward the front, you know, you always try to get your program signed because that's all you have in your hand, you know, for the most part. At least early on. Now people bring things specifically, but in the 70s and 80s, it really wasn't that well thought out. But I was going to change the trend. I didn't want to just get my ticket stub signed, or you know, a T-shirt signed that I bought at the concert, or the program signed that I bought at the concert. And when you raise those up to an artist, they see a sea of them, and they just grab anyone. And I had been thwarted so many times by getting one of his autographs at a concert that after I got thwarted, I said, I'm going to bring something cool, and I think I may have told the story, an individual, that he's going to have to notice. And so I brought this Elton John pillow, and he did, in fact, sign it. In fact, he walked across the stage and walked right up to me and signed it, which is a great memory. I've never known offhand what the date was. I know where I was sitting. I know the seat. I was right up at the front. I know the section, the area. But there were two concerts in a row when I did that, and I wasn't sure. I knew it was the second concert. And so when I went into my ticket stubs, I knew it was this concert at Poplar Creek in August of 1989, but I wasn't sure if it was the 26th or the 27th. I confirmed it was August 27th, 1989, when I got my pillow signed by Elton. And that, my friends, is why you keep your ticket stubs. Just one reason why. Nostalgia is certainly a part. Special memories, proof you were there, all those things. The same reason that we save pictures and other types of things from our past. To me, these are good friends. These bring back instant memories. And the cool thing is also looking at the ticket stubs themselves. Some of them are works of art. Some of them have photos of the artist on them. A lot of ticket stubs from England are very elaborate, and they have graphics on them, and they're oversized, and they even have pictures of the artist on them. I've got some tickets that are so old that they're still printed on like a rough paper. They're not computer generated. They were printers. They were printed. And they're much smaller. And people may remember these. If you're old enough, you remember these. There's a time when tickets were not, and now they're digital, and now you print them off on your printer. But there were times when they were actually very skinny and long and a different color. And they were printed on a kind of cardboardish kind of paper. I have many of those dating back to the early 80s. And then all of a sudden, of course, those just went away and the computer graphics took over. And so there's Ticketmaster and Ticketron tickets. And then there's other tickets from different venues that had their own style. They used their own, even though they used computerized, they used their own, stock. So it had their own insignia on them. So I've got, many from Poplar Creek, and even those changed over the years, and the Goodman Theater, and the Chicago Stadium, and you name it. I mean, I've been lucky in that I've seen some of the greatest and been to concerts in some of the greatest venues in the world, not only in the United States, but around the world. I've been to Carnegie Hall, and I've been to Radio City Music Hall, and Madison Square Garden, and here in Chicago, the Chicago Theater, and I've been to the Royal Opera House in London, and I've been to the Royal Albert Hall in London, and I've been to the La Scala Theater in Italy, and I've been to the Paris Opera House and the Vienna Opera House. So, as I said, these concerts have become not only moments, but also kind of special life memories and been in some legendary places. And these ticket stubs help me remember those. And it was great to go through them all in one sitting and no rush to finish this. Took my time. It took me a couple hours. And I looked and went, oh, that's right. I remember that Roy Orbison concert. Oh, that's right. I remember that Lou Reed concert. Oh my gosh, that's right. Especially some people I saw Leonard Cohen a couple of times. Ah, yes, the late Leonard Cohen. I remember that concert the first time, especially when I saw him. Oh, that's right. Saw Van Morrison do Astro Weeks, the album, live. Oh, that's right. So I've seen some amazing concerts of most of my favorites, as well as some of the biggest legendary people. And those concert tickets, not only are they memory joggers, nostalgic, they're works of art in some cases, and they're proof that you were there. I really didn't expect it, but when I looked inside, I said, this box may be one of my most prized and treasured boxes. I have all these bins of things of my past, and I'm like, and this ticket stub box may be the most important of them all. And what was actually very cool was, because I went through these and put them in order and went through them all and put them, as I said, by artist at least, I was able to count how many times I had seen some specific artists. And I have to say, I was very surprised. I shouldn't be surprised, but I really didn't realize, once again, over the years, how many times I had seen this artist. I've seen many artists multiple times. My favorites, I will go to try to see them, every time they tour or. And so, yes, I've seen your Bob Dylans and your Tom Petty's and your Billy Joel's and, some of these, The Who and the Stones. And as I said, and David Bowie and, James Taylor and Steely Dan and some of these multiple times, 3-4 times. I was surprised that the artist I have seen the most times, after Elton, 197, Bruce Springsteen, 47, the artist I've seen the most times is Elvis Costello. Now, he's one of my favorites, no question, which is why I've seen him so many times. And for a while, I saw him on every tour, every incarnation, and I've seen him, with his original band, The Attractions, and his new band, The Imposters. I just saw them at the end of 2019 at the Chicago Theater. I've seen him solo with Steve Naive. I've seen him solo by himself. I've seen him with Burt Bacharach in an orchestra. I've seen him with Emmylou Harris. And I've seen him with this amazing spinning wheel that he did in the 80s, which was amazing. He did three shows at the Riviera, which was three separate shows with three different bands. And one of the shows, he had this amazing, the amazing spinning wheel where they literally spun the wheel. Whatever song came up, that's the song they played. Still one of the coolest the concerts I've ever seen. Right in the heart of the popularity of Wheel of Fortune, definitely playing off of that. But I didn't think I'd seen him that many times, but I have. So he comes in third, which was a surprise. I've seen Paul Simon five times. I've seen James Taylor five times. I've seen Mark Knopfler and Dire Straits combined and individually four times. I've seen Roger Waters perform The Wall, which is still probably the greatest concert production show I've ever seen. Just amazing. I was a little too young to see the original Wall. They only did in the United States, they only did shows on in LA and in California, I think 8 and 8 on each coast, and that was it. But I did see Roger Waters several years ago do that on his own, and it was amazing. When I started looking at these concerts and learning a little about myself, like, wow, I didn't know I saw Tom Petty, as I said before, in 1985 or 84, whatever that was. And so there was a lot of new discoveries, a lot of memories, a lot of surprises. Never thought I saw Harry Connick. Oh, no, I must mention this, folks. I always used to joke. I still do. Not as much now. concerts were such a major part. They still are, but at one time they were a major, major part of my life. And I would always joke, especially when I got tickets like 6 or 8 months in advance. I hope no one in my family dies because I've got Bruce tickets or I've got Elton tickets. And I have to say, surprisingly, only one time did a family death interfere with me going to a show. And I am proud to say, folks, and if you think I'm crazy and obsessive and a little off, you'll be happy to know that when a death in my family did conflict with a concert, one that I did want to see, one of my favorites, who I've seen five times as well, Paul Simon, I didn't go. I went to spend time with my family. In fact, it was my one of my dearest aunts. She was my godmother as well. And on the day that she passed away, I was supposed to see a Paul Simon concert. So it wasn't the wake and it wasn't the funeral, but the family was gathering to just be together. It was the first loss in my dad's family of one of his sisters, and the first death in our family of my immediate family, and so it was really a shock, and she wasn't expected to pass away. So I had to be with my family. Now I could have, I guess, the irresponsible Jim could have said, "Well, I'll go to the concert and I'll stop by afterwards." But no. So you'll be happy to know, I did choose family over a concert. Now, granted, it wasn't Bruce or Elton. It was Paul Simon, who I liked, but it wasn't Bruce or Elton. I'm almost positive I would have still been with my family if it was Bruce or Elton. Pretty positive. I guess I would have. I probably would have, I think. Maybe. Who knows? Anyway, thankfully, I didn't have to make that choice. But no. Well, I don't know. Anyway, so let's get off that because I'm going to debate that in my mind for years. I didn't go to the concert, but only one time. And through all these years, did that really happen? And I made the right choice. Yes, I did. But if you love music as much as I have, well, I have to mention also Cheap Trick. They're a five-timer. I've seen them five times. And that's five. It seems like five times is the most I've seen, aside from the 11. After Elton and Bruce and Elvis, which was 11, the most I've seen anybody is like five times. I've seen Dylan five times. I've seen Petty 4 times. I think I've seen James Taylor 5 times. I've seen Cheap Trick 5 times. So 5 seems to be the most for the other bands that are certainly among my favorites, but just not, you know, the main ones. But yeah, over almost 550 concerts in 44 years. That's not too bad. But I really have come to appreciate this box of ticket stubs even more than I always did. Now that it's organized, I'm certainly happy with it, but getting a chance to look at it closely this time, it really made me cherish all those memories, all those ticket stubs, and actually made me, once again, as I do on a daily basis, thank my mom for instilling that pack rat mentality in my head somewhere, because if I didn't have these tickets, a little piece of me would have been missing forever, and now I can go back and look at those every day and relive some of those memories, or at least go, yeah, that was a cool thing that I did that day. Where were you on that day? If you've saved your ticket stubs, or if you've saved anything that's important to you, photos, anything from your childhood or even your recent past, don't be afraid to revisit them. You'll be surprised. The memories, the discoveries that you will make for yourself and about yourself. I'm looking forward to that next ticket stub to add to this box. I hope it's sooner rather than later. I hope it's in 2021 instead of 2022. I've got at least 11 tickets outstanding right now in hand with dates that have either been rescheduled for 2021 or are going to be rescheduled. So I've got skin in the game here, folks. I hope to see those 11 concerts sometime, somewhere, hopefully someday soon, because they will go from just being ticket stubs in an envelope now to becoming memories of that moment, and then they'll go where they belong in the ticket stub box as great memories of the past. I love my ticket stubs. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com. We're also at any platform where you download and listen to your favorite podcast. So don't forget, if you're there, subscribe, rate this podcast, and most importantly, tell your friends. Send them a link. Send them a message. Send them the word that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why isn't it theirs? Your loyalty and your devotion is much appreciated. I hope you enjoyed episode 223. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Save this ticket stub.